Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it starts off first on like the strength part of things, the movements, and that's step one, John. Then on the field, the change of direction, the pivoting, the moving, all of those would be the things to go. So we'll just take it, you know, as it goes, you know, through the week. But he'd have to see all of the steps, you know, along this week to hit those marks, the speed, the stopping, the change of direction, all of it.
Dan Quinn yesterday, finally, we got news on Jade's injury. Of course, it broke with the national guys right before his press conference. Dan Quinn, let's face it, if you have read some of the quotes or you watched the presser with the guys and gals on the beat, he really didn't get specific about anything as it relates to the knee injury itself. But the reporting suggests a sprained knee. John Keim, in his story, had that the MRI last Friday revealed no serious damage. So, day to day, we'll certainly learn more tomorrow and find out what he is on the injury report. And then Friday, it sounds like Dan Quinn will know for sure on whether or not Jaden will start on Sunday. I have no idea really what the outcome will be. My guess would be at this point, because of the lack of information over the weekend, the incredible secrecy around this, they did a good job of not letting anything leak out until right before Quinn spoke. The fact that Quinn was not specific even in his presser yesterday tells me that there's some concern and that there's a pretty strong possibility that Jaden will not play against the Raiders on Sunday. That is a total, you know, tea leaf reading, not based on any information. If Jaden's injury was insignificant and not going to cause any concern as to whether or not he would play on Sunday, we would have heard that a few days ago. There's obviously some concern. He obviously got it banged up. We learned about the play in which he got hurt on. Although Quinn wasn't even specific about that in answering Nikki Javala's question during the presser yesterday. But he suggested, and I think everybody figured out, it was the first play of the fourth quarter when he was forced out of the pocket by who else? Micah Parsons. And then number 20, Bullard, hit him helmet on knee. He went and played the rest of the game. Now, there was no indication of limping until he rolled his ankle on that final drive of the game. He did that too in the game, and he got up hobbling after that as well. But Jaden Daniels is day-to-day. My guess is we're going to get Marcus Mariota against his former team Sunday, the Las Vegas Raiders, who lost last night on Monday Night Football in the late game, 20-9, and did not look good, losing to the Chargers. They'll come east, short week, 1 o'clock kick, 10 a.m. West Coast time. Should be advantage Washington based on those indications alone. Typically, they are, but with no Jaden Daniels, who knows? But we'll obviously be here to discuss this day by day, because we'll have more information certainly tomorrow. Maybe not for the show tomorrow, but for other shows that come after Quinn speaks and after they practice. Now, I do have some thoughts on Jaden Daniels being injured now for a second time in 22 games in his NFL career. Last year, you know, obviously the rib episode, this year with the sprained knee. Let's not forget he got injured in week two and came out for a play or two last year against the Giants, and he was on the injury report last week with a wrist injury, even though that amounted to nothing. I will get to some of those thoughts, and I want yours as well here in this first hour. We will do that. One one guest on the show, actually two, but one live. Tom Shad, the new guy at The Post, is going to join us at 10:35. So 30 minutes from now, Tom Shad, who is now on the beat for The Washington Post, replacing Nikki Javala, who went to The Athletic. We've not had Tom on the show. He'll join us at 10:35. And I've got a treat for you, I think. I think I do. You know, most of you, or the majority of you, really loved when Cooley did his film breakdowns. He was really like a pioneer on that front. Now, he had a lot more information than most people, and certainly more than the internet film breakdown people. He knew what the plays were, he knew how they were designed, and then he was able to analyze with the All-22 the result based on the intention of the play. And he was so good at it for so long, did it, you know, initially with Zabe, and with Galdi, and then he did it with me when we were doing the show together, and then he did it, you know, on my podcast for a few years, and he'll do it, you know, he'll do it again this year when he is paying attention to football, which is hardly ever right now. But on the show today will be Steve Suter. Steve, for those of you who don't know, Steve calls Maryland football games with Johnny Holiday on the Maryland Football Radio Network, which we carry right here, Maryland and Wisconsin, this Saturday at noon at Madison. The Terps are undefeated through their first three games and have a pretty exciting quarterback. But that's not why Steve, you're going to hear from Steve today. Steve is a Washington fan. He's a big football fan. He's a tremendous analyst. It's why I've had him on to talk Terps and talk college football in the past. Steve, by the way, I didn't mention, was when he left college in the early 2000s, he was the all-time leading ACC punt returner in every category and owned several NCAA punt return records as well. He is still in the record books for various records in the ACC and the NCAA. He was a phenomenal punt returner at Maryland and a pretty good receiver as well. Anyway, the Maryland baseball coach, his name is Matt Swope. Matt, it listens to the show, and Matt reached out to me recently, and he said, you know who'd be phenomenal at doing kind of the Cooley film breakdown? Steve Suter would be. He is just incredible. Everybody that talks to Steve learns so much about football. So I tried him out yesterday on the podcast, and you're going to hear about 15 to 17 minutes of it. He's excellent. Excellent. Really good. So Steve Suter, probably at 11 or maybe 11:25. Haven't decided yet. Our rundown is dynamic today. It's evolving as we go along. This from Timmy. Timmy writes, Sheehan, quit whining. It's an Eagles thing with you. Shove off. Yeah, I get that last part. Shove off. Thank you, Timmy. From Jason, stop your complaining. The Eagles have figured out something the rest of the league can't stop. How about come up with ways to stop it? Shut the blank up. Thank you for that, Jason. I talked yesterday about the, you know, tush push brotherly shove being really, I think, at this point, an abomination for the league. From my standpoint, I would bet a lot of money that this thing is gone, certainly at the latest by next year. They are regretting not finding those other two votes at the spring meetings. You know, Jason Kelsey went in and did a number on a number of owners in pitching that this thing should not be abolished. And somehow he swayed enough owners to vote no on the rule change. And so we've got to deal with it, I think, one more year. I think the chance of it being legal next year is near zero. I really do. One of the reasons, just so everybody understands, pushing a ball carrier or pulling a ball carrier, pushing from behind or pulling, was illegal in the game forever until a few years ago when they started to allow it by not calling it and then by rule. I mean, you couldn't do this for most of your NFL watching days. You could not push a ball carrier from behind. You could not pull a ball carrier from behind at any point. Or any location on the field. It's not like, you know, we're not talking about something that we're trying to abolish that's been around for years. We're trying to stop something that's been around for about 7 or 8 years. And then the point really is six tush-pushes in a game. Six plays of your marquee game. This is a television show, people. The NFL and football in general is a television show first. Hence the $27 billion in revenues that primarily come, those revenues do from television entities, streaming entities. It is a show. It's entertainment. There's nothing entertaining about this play because it's the only play in a game that has no drama and a play which the outcome is already determined before it starts. Every other play you watch, even an extra point, has some drama because you're not entirely sure of the outcome. So you're going to run six plays that don't look anything like football the way we watch it. Looks like rugby, a scrum, where there's zero drama, zero interest, because it is a predetermined outcome. They are not going to get stopped. Now, they may get stopped on third and two from getting a first down, but they'll get that yard to set up fourth and one. Because I saw the stat, the Eagles were 4 for 6 on tush pushes. Well, I don't know what that means because they weren't stopped from getting a first down on any of them. The two misses were third down misses. You know, third down two, where they just advanced it to get it into position to run it on fourth down. This is, it's a play. Look, I don't blame the Eagles. Let me be clear on that. These are the rules. They're using the rules. They've got a big offensive line. They've got a big, thick quarterback. And they are guaranteed, if they can gain at least 8 yards on first and second down, to maintain possession of the football. Especially since they're not legislating. They're not enforcing the rules on the play. And good for them for breaking the rules on this play consistently with false starts. By the way, the opponent breaks the rules too. There are a lot of lining up on, in the neutral zone. There's no doubt about that. But there's false starts, there's offsides, both sides, and it's not being enforced. So this play, which has no interest, no drama, because it is the only play that's run in a football game where you know what the outcome is going to be, it's not enforced. And then beyond that, and this is what I've made the case for, recently, is that I know that, literally it doesn't slow the pace of the game. But when you've got six of these and often back to back on third and fourth down, it is two plays that you can basically get up and leave the room. You know, like the PAT used to be, because that was pretty much a guaranteed outcome at 97% or whatever it was. And that's kind of where we are with the Philly tush push. And they did something about that. They moved the extra point back. There weren't any kickoff returns. People said, that's a play you can get up and leave the room for. Go to the bathroom, go to the kitchen, get more food, get more, something else to drink. But they fixed that. This is a play you do not have to watch. It's painful to watch, but you know what the outcome's going to be, especially if they're going to let them break the rules. It's not their problem that they're breaking the rules and getting away with it. It's the league's problem. Why aren't they enforcing this? But the pace of play to, again, not literally, figuratively, for the game to basically come to a halt for multiple plays during an offensive drive, not a PAT, not a kickoff, where you don't have to be on the edge of your seat because you know what the outcome is not good for the game. Not good for the game. I can't imagine that there isn't a bunch of, especially Sunday, with six of these in the marquee game of the weekend, marquee game of the early season NFL schedule and the rematch of the Super Bowl, there wasn't some hand-wringing about not getting those two extra votes. I do not blame the Eagles for this at all, Timmy and Jason. And it's not a whining thing. I promise you, if this were Jacksonville or Carolina doing this, I'd feel the same way as a football fan, as an NFL fan. Certainly, the fact that it is the Eagles makes it a little bit more hurtful, but it's not a reaction changer for me. It's not like I'd be in favor of it if it were somebody else. No. They're getting rid of it. Massive money, I would bet, that this thing does not exist this time next year. I don't know if they can get rid of it in the midst of this season. I don't think they can. But I would bet in the league offices and around the NFL, this is something where they're like, you got to be kidding me. We're going to watch six of these in the rematch of the Super Bowl where there's literally no drama. And now Kansas City has no chance to get the ball back. And I'll add this, and I've talked about this for months now whenever this subject has come up. I understand having a guarantee of a first and 10, but they're losing a lot of big play potential, a lot of yardage. You know, you've got the best offensive line. You've got a quarterback that's dual threat. You've got arguably the best running back in the league. You've got maybe the best pair of wide receivers in the league, certainly top five in terms of wide receiver pairing. We know the explosive plays that happen on third and one, third and two, fourth and one. You know, those are where you get super big explosive plays. You also can get stopped and turn the ball over on downs. So they're not going to take that risk when there is a guarantee that they're going to have a first and 10. Understood. But it is something to, I'd love somebody, you know, it wouldn't take that long to go through all of the tush pushes and then to go through all of sort of the average of third and one and fourth and one yardage, or third and two, fourth and one yardage plays, and come up with the amount of lost yardage the Eagles have had by choosing to run this. I mean, there's a quid pro quo there. It's like, okay, we're going to get those big plays, but we're also going to punt occasionally because we may not make the third and two or the fourth and one. Go for it if we're running a normal football play instead of this abomination of a rugby scrum. I think it's really important, though, that this league, this was against the rules forever. Forever you couldn't do it. So it's not like you know, somebody just figured something out and, you know, after all of these years and you're going to end it. No, this was against the rule for, you know, 75 years or whatever it was, however long the NFL's been around, minus like 8 years. I forget how old the league is. The league's probably 100 years at this point, right?
Yeah, they hit their 100th year a couple years ago. They did that.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, so it's 106 years, 107 years. It has been illegal for probably 98 of those years, is my guess. It was. Stupid, the whole thing. All right, let's talk Jaden Daniels. We'll do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app. And don't forget, you can watch us on the Team 980's YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button and hit the like button when you get there.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jaden Daniels is in jeopardy of not playing on Sunday against the Raiders. Not a lot of specifics from the team other than day-to-day knee injury. He did have an MRI, but a lot of the reporting around it suggests that it is a sprained knee. We don't know what grade sprain it is, whether it's severe or moderate or, you know, insignificant. But the reporting has been a knee sprain that could potentially keep him out of the game Sunday against the Raiders. Remember last year, of course, we had the ribs. Remember last year in week two against the Giants when he took a big hit to the rib area and was forced to come out of the game for a play or two. I think it was Jeff Driscoll who was the backup that day that came in. Mariota was down. It was a big hit, and that was a scary thing given that it was game two of his career. And now we have this. So, look, Jaden Daniels coming out of LSU, to me, and I think a lot of people, there was one concern that outweighed all others, and I didn't really have any concerns except for this one, and that was, will his frame hold up in the NFL? Will he be able to protect himself? Will they be able to protect him with play calling, with an offensive line, with a run game, the whole thing? Because he did get banged up occasionally at LSU. And, you know, he was a hyper-competitive, I'm going for it in a lot of situations. I talked a lot about that before the draft in 2024 that, you know, Jaden played on that team in 2023 at LSU that was truly among the worst Division I power school defensive teams in America. He knew that leaving the field meant he's going to be back on the field the next time down by at least another seven. So he really, you know, did everything he could to keep that offense on the field. And by the way, you know, most of the time it worked. And most of the time they were right there keeping pace, scoring with the opponent. And they won a lot of games, but they would have been a national championship contending team had the defense just been bad instead of truly horrific, which it was in 2023. Interesting to see LSU this year as a side note. They are dominant defensively, but really don't look that great offensively. Things change. We'll see how it plays out during the course of the year. But that was, for me, always the concern, you know, and not knowing a lot about the personality and the person that he was other than what was coming out of LSU. You know, you never know that from a fan position in terms of the kind of character that you're getting in a player. So we've now seen that we're in year two and there is an injury and there is the possibility of missing some time. Last year, he just ended up missing that Carolina game. He went out early, missed that game. It was a no-brainer, 42-19. Mariota played really well in relief, and then he was back the next week against Chicago throwing a Hail Mary to win the game. There's a chance he'll play. I'll just reiterate what I said in the opening segment. I think that the tea leaves point to this being a concern, and that it's a knee, not ribs. Ribs, they'll tell you, you know, always is more of a pain threshold thing. A knee is much different. I think we understand that as sports fans. I can't imagine they're going to let him go out there if there's any issue with the knee, if it's not fully 100%. And you know, you heard Quinn, we played that sound coming into the show about all the markers he needs to hit before they'll let him back out onto the field. I think the secrecy over the weekend until we heard from Quinn yesterday at 3:30, or, you know, the reports that came out from Schefter and Rappaport, you know, shortly before the press conference, I think that speaks to, look, if he was totally fine, I think we would have heard he's totally fine. We didn't hear anything specific to the knee injury other than it's day-to-day, he had an MRI, it is the knee. They wouldn't say anything, Quinn wouldn't, about is it a sprain, what grade sprain it is, what did the MRI show? We've had to deal with the reporting on that. John Keim had that the MRI, according to sources, revealed no serious damage. That's the best news out of all of this. We're pretty sure we know what play it happened on early in the fourth quarter. A hit by number 20 after he was chased out of the pocket by Parsons' helmet to the knee. Although what's interesting is we didn't see him limp after that. You know, you may say, well, why was he allowed to stay in the game if he hurt his knee on that play? He played the entire game. That meant a whole quarter if that was the first play of the fourth quarter. Well, it's very possible they didn't know that he was hurt on that play. He wasn't limping until he rolled his ankle late in the fourth quarter on that drive that made the score 27-18. Now, Jaden has to take less hits. I mean, simplifying it, he's got to get hit less. He's taking too many hits. Some of it's on him. Some of it's on other factors, you know, like the offensive line. He got absolutely obliterated the other night in the pocket more so than outside of it. And by the way, there's not much you can do about that with pocket passers, and he is that, you know, as part of his overall offensive talent. He can really throw from the pocket. He can really deliver from the pocket. And quarterbacks that do that are going to take some hits. They're going to get hit after they throw it. And sometimes they're going to be awkward hits. You know, sometimes it's going to be a roll up on a leg or a knee. And we've seen that how many times during our years of watching football. But there are plays in which he shouldn't be getting hit. Context is everything. Let's talk about what I think needs to happen with Jaden Daniels moving forward. First of all, if you don't know this, he was the most hit quarterback last year in the NFL, and through 2 weeks of this season, he's been hit more often than any starting quarterback in the NFL. His frame, which is not a Josh Allen frame or a Lamar Jackson frame, I think if that continues to happen, if they don't figure out a way to reduce the number of times he gets hit, we're going to deal with this in during his career. We're going to deal with, you know, once or twice a year, Jaden's day-to-day. Hopefully, that's all we're dealing with, and we're not dealing with something serious. So there's only so much you can do from the pocket. You know, quarterbacks, you want eyes to always be down the field. You want that quarterback to be protected. They went out and invested in protection for him, in Laremy Tunsil, who did not have necessarily a great game on Sunday. Nobody did on that offensive line Sunday. But it's all of the other stuff in which they, I would imagine, they are examining, i.e. scrambling. Context is everything. Jaden goes for it a lot. He's hyper competitive. On second and six, you know, it's in the second quarter, that's a different scramble intent than fourth and eight in the fourth quarter, down four. All right. He's got to pick his spots. Now, he doesn't go for it every single time. I'm not suggesting that he isn't discerning, that he hasn't, you know, made wise decisions, but he's got to make those wise decisions all the time. Out of bounds, sliding on scrambles. When in context, it's not do or die. Don't take unnecessary hits as a scrambler if you don't have to, based on score, time. Number two, designed runs. As a quarterback draw, you know, quarterback, which he's very effective running QB draws, there is typically a lot of space to get down rather than take a big hit. Look, we saw it in that Cincinnati game. That was a scramble, not a quarterback draw. I mean, he went for a touchdown in a preseason game. He's lucky that there wasn't a young player out there trying to make the team that went to, you know, went for a big hit, a blow up hit, a make the team hit. Nobody seemed to touch him. They thought he had a flag on him as he went into the end zone. So QB draws, opportunity to get down, opportunity to make good decisions. Other, you know, sort of designed quarterback runs. Well, you've got what they run: quarterback counter, quarterback power, quarterback sweep. Those plays I've been talking about since game one last year when they ran them against Tampa in the opener. I personally think that they should avoid those because there isn't a place to slide because you're following blockers. Typically, those plays end in the field of play in a pile. Now, you can get to the outside, and if you're outnumbering the defense blocking-wise because you're 11-on-11 in the run game, there is the feeling like that's a really effective play with a quarterback like Jaden Daniels. I agree, but I think the odds are highest on that play that he's going to be tackled sometimes in a pile. Option runs, all right? Zone read, you know, in particular. Those plays typically offer the opportunity for the quarterback to get to the sideline on a keeper or in the field of play to slide. You know, if he's reading that play correctly, which he hasn't done consistently over the first 22 games of his career, that particular run allows, because it's on the edge, after you stick it in the running back's gut and pull it as the end crashes down, which is the way you're supposed to run it, you're on the edge. You've got a chance to get out. You've got a chance to slide if you turn it upfield. He's got to be more discerning on scrambles based on game context. He has to feel that way on quarterback draws as well. On the quarterback design stuff, in addition to the draws, I think that those plays should be few and far between because they are the highest probability of him being tackled in the field of play. And on zone reads, on option runs, he's got the opportunity more often than not to take a hit. This is on him. It's on the coaches, but it's really on him. And understanding, as we all do, fourth and eight, fourth quarter, down four, and he's back to throw, and he's scrambling, and there's a lot of traffic. He's got to go for it, you know? You only have 17 of these. You got to go win the game. We understand that. But, you know, first and 10, first quarter, up 7-0 already, scrambling, you don't need to go into an area in which you're going to get hit. You don't have to, on a zone read first quarter up 7-0, decide to pull it and then, like he did against the Giants, not get out of bounds for maybe two less yards and instead turn it up the field and get crunched on the sideline. If that doesn't change, if he continues to get hit over and over again the way he has, we're going to miss some time with him, and he's going to be at risk. He's great. He is almost without flaw through 22 games. I mean, that's coming off probably the worst game of his career on Thursday night against the Packers. But availability is the best ability, as we know. And he's got to continue to grow and make sure that he is doing everything to stay available. All right, Tom Shadd, who now covers the team for the Washington Post, will join us next.
All right. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is September 16th. Dan Quinn announced yesterday that Jaden Daniels had an MRI after Thursday Night Football versus the Green Bay Packers and is day-to-day with a knee sprain, putting his status in Sunday or for Sunday in jeopardy. The Nats, they fall to the Braves last night by a score of 11-3. Tough night to be Mitch Parker as he pitched five innings, giving up 10 hits and six earned runs. Nats will reset for a doubleheader today versus Atlanta. First game at 1:05. Jake Irvin on the bump for the Nats. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 12:35 on the Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Suter, former Maryland all-time great punt returner, now part of the Johnny Holiday Steve Suter game broadcast crew, is going to be with us on the show doing a film breakdown of the Packers-Washington game Thursday. I promise you, you're going to want to hear this. He's really, really good at it. Joining me right now for the first time is Tom Shadd. Tom is new to the Washington Post. He's on the beat covering the team for the Washington Post. You can follow Tom on X on Twitter at Tom_Shadd, S-C-H-A-D. Tom, I'm looking at your X account. So you went to AU. Are you from here?
No, I'm originally from Colorado, but I've been here the better part of the past 15 years.
I guess. Oh, yeah, it does say Colorado years, native. But I'm reading that right now. I missed that part.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you've been here for how long? Sorry.
About 15 years. I mean, I had a couple years in Memphis, but yeah, I've been around and covered this team for the Washington Times for like a year or something way back in the early aughts. So yeah, it's a new chapter at the Post, but kind of a return in a lot of different ways.
Where were you most recently before coming back here?
I was at USA Today for about 8 years.
Got it. Covering the NFL?
A little bit of enterprise investigations, Olympic stuff. There was some NFL stuff in there, but it was mostly kind of league-wide stuff as opposed to team-specific.
All right. Well, welcome back and best of luck. You joined just in time for a season that is, you know, without question, the highest expectation season in, you know, 25 years, probably the most anticipated season in forever. And 2 weeks into it, we have an injury. What's your hunch on what this injury is and how serious it is? We didn't get a lot from the head coach yesterday. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really hard to call at this point in the week. I mean, one of the interesting kind of subplots to come out of yesterday, what Dan Quinn was explaining, was the play on which he got injured. You know, I think kind of I had thought that it was later in the fourth quarter than it was. The fact that it was on the first play of the fourth quarter, at least as Dan Quinn described it, you know, indicates that he played the entirety of the fourth quarter and actually had some success in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that I think is one small signal that, you know, it might not be a significant injury. Now that said, you know, there are all these sort of macro factors, right, about what you do with a franchise quarterback, how quickly you try to bring him back, how kind of careful you are in terms of bringing him back. So, it's a long-winded way of I guess not really answering your question. It's just really hard to say right now, and I think, you know, tomorrow we'll get, you know, a small glimpse out on the practice field before they close it up to reporters, but I think that will be interesting, and then, you know, just kind of hearing how he's progressing and how he's looking as the week goes on.
You know, we've had some experience around here with young quarterbacks with star potential playing injured and it not working out well. Do you think they knew he hurt his knee on that play and let him play the fourth quarter or not?
That's a great question. I mean, my assumption would be that he would, you know, talk with the coaching staff about that and let them know, you know, but I don't have any kind of sourcing or first-hand knowledge to back that up. I mean, I think a lot of times, especially with in-game injuries, it's hard to assess, you know, for players, especially when, you know, they're running on adrenaline and stuff, like how serious or not serious something is. And, you know, as we've seen from Jaden over his time here, you know, he's always going to try to play, right? So, you know, it could be a situation where it just felt like something, you know, minor, and it wasn't until the adrenaline died down after the game that he was like, oh, no, this is kind of bothering me.
I think that makes the most sense, because we didn't see him limp until he rolled his ankle in that fourth quarter drive that made it 27-18, which I think until yesterday, like you said, we all thought that that's where he got hurt.
Yeah. So the fact that, like, and I was going back yesterday and kind of rewatching that early part of the fourth quarter. I mean, if he's showing any visible signs of it, it's almost imperceptible, you know, to the average viewer. So, yeah, I mean, my guess is that, you know, there was some communication, but, you know, that it wasn't deemed to be that serious. And there's also a chance, mind you, that it might not be that serious now. You know, he could be kind of, right, you know, back to normal or somewhat normal operation, and this could all be much ado about nothing. We just don't know just yet.
Yeah, we don't know. We're talking to Tom Shad from the Washington Post. But as a reporter, you know, and you've kind of given me the answer that you don't know. But, I mean, have you thought about some of, you know, the tea leaves and reading them? Like I talked about earlier in the show, Tom, if this were insignificant, why haven't we heard that yet? Why didn't we hear that quickly? Why was Quinn so, you know, evasive to a certain degree yesterday? Nikki asked the question about, is it a knee sprain? He didn't even answer that part of it. We've learned from reporting that it's a sprain, but we don't know what grade. Does anything in reading the tea leaves as a longtime reporter steer you in one direction or the other if you had to wager on it in terms of him playing or not playing Sunday?
Yeah, it's a fair question. You know, I think in my experience, teams and kind of team leadership, they deal with injuries kind of broadly speaking differently. I was talking about being in Memphis, and, like, you know, I had some time there with Justin Fuente when he was the coach, and some time with Mike Norvell when he was the coach, and they just approached injuries totally differently in the degree to which they would talk about them. My read on kind of what Dan Quinn was doing yesterday is just kind of, you know, an unwillingness to provide specifics about injuries generally. If you want to read the tea leaves, I mean, you can kind of interpret what he's saying as, you know, oh, there is something definitely there with Jaden, but, you know, he's not one to offer up, like, specifics about anybody who's injured. I mean, we asked about John Bates and Noah Brown too, and he said they're soft tissue injuries and, you know, right, wasn't going into a lot of detail on that one either. So, yeah, I mean, that's why, and you know, it's just hard to kind of read the tubes too much when teams are like that. As you said, I mean, we've been among the outlets reporting that it is a knee sprain. We don't know what degree or severity it is. But that's why I think I kind of pumped the brakes on, like, yeah, kind of really looking into how Dan was addressing it, because I think a lot of that could just be like the general kind of approach unwillingness to discuss injuries.
Yeah, he wasn't specific about Bates or Brown, but he did say that it's a long shot that either one of those two would play, and he did not, you know, indicate one way or the other on Jaden Daniels. We're talking to Tom Shad. You know, you mentioned something, you know, organizationally, kind of how they handle this with, you know, this franchise quarterback that's played at a very high level through his first 22 games, really until Thursday night. And whether or not, I guess, for the lack of a better description, Tom, they would err on the side of caution. Do you have any sense of how they would approach that? Would they err on the side of caution, or would they they say, you know what? He went through and hit all these markers, and, you know, he practiced. We're rolling with him.
Yeah, I don't have a strong sense as of, this minute on a Tuesday morning. I think if you were to kind of play out the scenarios, one scenario would be Jaden feels fine. He's itching to play. He's kind of pounding on the table to play. And as long as he's checked every box, you know, they kind of look at each other as kind of the team brass and go, well, if the doctors say he's good to go and he wants to play, we'll put him out there. Obviously, it's not as simple or straightforward as that, but it kind of just depends, I think, on them, watching him over the course of the week, and then not just hearing what he's saying, but also kind of monitoring how he's moving on the practice field and stuff, because that's one thing Dan Quinn said yesterday, is there's a certain, element of protecting guys from themselves, and especially with it being week three and his importance to the team. There would be reason to err on the side of caution, but I think they would have a hard time keeping him out if he checks the boxes and he's found on stable to play.
What do you think about, this young, superstar who's taken more hits in the last 22 games than any other quarterback in the league, took more hits in 2024 than any starting quarterback through 2 weeks. He's been hit more than any starting quarterback in the league. What's the solution? What's the answer to that?
That's been a really interesting, kind of part of the discourse here over the last, 48 hours. And it's something that gets absolutely no conversation when he's offensive rookie of the year and he's tearing things up and he's scrambling for these, crazy 30-yard runs and doing the stuff that he does. I think my kind of sense is that, when you're hurt, everyone's going to freak out about it. When you're not, it's kind of like a non-issue. And if you kind of take both of those off the table, this is just kind of part of the risk reward of having a guy like Jaden Daniels play quarterback. He's going to do things that other quarterbacks can't do with his legs, which is going to help you and going to win you some games. It's also going to expose him and team to some risk that you wouldn't have with somebody who's more stationary under center. And so that's just kind of part of what you sign up for with a guy like this. But to have it be such a large part of the discourse now and kind of forgotten when, he's playing really well. I think, from a team standpoint, and from a fan standpoint, you kind of just have to take this as this is part of the deal, right? If you want all the benefits of Jaden's scrambling and playmaking, you also have to kind of recognize that there are some drawbacks to it as well.
Yeah, for sure. We're talking to Tom Shad from the Washington Post. All right. Of the other injuries, Wise and Eckler done for the year, Bates and Noah Brown probably out this week at least. Who's going to be missed the most, do you think? I think it's a tough question. I haven't come up with a good answer yet.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher than it appears on its face. Kind of the knee-jerk reaction would be Eckler, just because of the state of the running back room and everything that he kind of provides from a pass-catching standpoint. I think it actually might be Dietrich Wise. The part of me is tempted to say John Bates as well. These are guys that just fill very critical, if overlooked, roles on the offense and defense, respectively. Bates, if you go back and watch the film, there are so many plays that Micah Parsons impacts, particularly on the right side with Josh Connerly, where you would think that there might have been some plans to have John Bates in there helping with the blocking or chipping or what have you. So to lose him, I think, is a big blow. And then Wise, the biggest difference to me between the first game and the second game was just the defensive line. Offensive line is kind of 1A, 1B, but Wise is obviously a huge, huge body up there. He brings kind of a different profile than the other guys that they have on that roster. And they talked yesterday about kind of, Jalen Holmes and some other solutions, guys to kind of fill in that spot. But you don't really have a good replacement for him. And I think given the way that they've constructed that defense and the importance of that defensive front, Wise, if you had to have me pick one, might be the biggest one to lose.
On Eckler, do you think there's a chance that they go out and look for an answer? you know, via trade. There's not really anything left free agency-wise. I know they signed Chase Edmonds to the practice squad. They signed Donovan Edwards a couple of weeks ago to the practice squad. But I'm thinking, like, big. You know, we know that, you know, Adam Peters was part of the crew that traded for Christian McCaffrey midseason. Could, like, an Alvin Kamara, as an example, be a solution for this team? If you I think they believe they're in a win now mode, taking advantage of Jaden's rookie deal. Do you think that's in play at all with them? Something like that.
Sure. I mean, I think it's a possibility. I think it kind of depends on how the next couple weeks unfold and how much they think the issue is a running back issue versus an offensive line issue. Bill looked great in week one. And I think a lot of that was just, you know, obviously his kind of ability to kind of make some cuts and follow the blockers and all that stuff, but it largely boiled down to the line. And so I think if you start seeing kind of a resurgence from the offensive line, maybe they look at it and go, well, you know, we're happy with what we have. As long as the offensive line is kind of opening up holes, we just roll the dice and go with that. But if they kind of get a couple weeks down the road and say, well, you know, we're not doing enough from the running back spot specifically, yeah, I think it's feasible that they can make a move.
Do you think there's any chance they give Josh Connerly Jr. a break for a few weeks and put Wiley in there at right tackle?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. It kind of just gets to, how they want to handle him as a player in the long term. Like, I think, you know, obviously drafting him in the first round, starting him out there in week one, against Brian Burns, who was no slouch in his own right, you know, and then to go from him to Parsons. I took that as a signal that, they want him to kind of grow into the role, and they're willing to kind of take some lumps here in the early going. I think if they wanted to ease him into action, that would have been kind of a logical move to, you know, start Wiley at the start of the season and make a switch kind of midseason. So the fact that they started him from week one signaled to me that they're okay with some growing pains. So, I mean, I would not be surprised if Wiley was out there this week, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they just ride with Josh against Max Crosby and just kind of let him continue to learn on the job, which is, I mean, obviously tough, and you have to be careful because you don't want him to have too many brutal games in a row at the start of a career because it can kind of mess with your psyche. And I'm not talking specifically to Josh. I'm just talking broadly for young players. So you have to be careful with that aspect of it. I think it's just it's kind of a short-term versus long-term thing because having these reps against these pass rushers will probably help them grow in the long term. But what's the cost here in the short term?
So what did you think this team would be 2 weeks ago before the opener? And what do you think right now about the season that, you know, still has 4 months left in it?
Yeah, macro level, 30,000 foot view, my thoughts have not changed at all. You know, I think you were looking at a playoff team, that has a chance to kind of get back to where they got to last year, and I don't think that anything has changed. And it's really tempting, especially in these first couple weeks, to have kind of knee-jerk reactions because everything's kind of been unknown. But I think, you know, when we get to the end of December, you look back at week two and go, well, you know, the Packers were a buzzsaw, and, like, that's just kind of the story of that particular game. They might not look as dominant on the offensive and defensive lines throughout the course of the season as they did against the Giants. There might be some regression of the mean there, but from a macro level, I mean, I don't think this team is all that different from, the team that I thought they were kind of coming into the season. Now, Wise and Eckler, obviously big blows, and we'll see what happens with Jaden and if he misses, this week. But macro level, I think it kind of, the team is what the team was entering the year.
Way too reasonable, Tom. Far too reasonable for, you know, an NFL fan. So last one for you, going back to Thursday night. What do you think from a coaching standpoint they regret the most about Thursday night's game?
If I had to put one thing out there, I think it's probably getting away from the run in the second half. That's something that Dan Quinn talked about, but I went back and was looking at the stats. In the second half, you know, they had the ball six times. They ran the ball, this is from the running backs, six times for a total of 14 yards. And, you know, part of that is like an ineffectiveness. where they couldn't get anything going on the ground. And part of it was they just got away from it and they became totally one dimensional in the second half, which, you know, Dan Quinn made the point. They weren't totally out of it. Like there's a part early in the fourth quarter where they had a shot, but they just become so one dimensional on offense. And especially going against that pass rush and guys like Micah Parsons, you're just leaving, you know, your offensive line totally exposed. So I think if they had a do-over, if Cliff Kingsbury had a do-over, that would be the one thing, you know, running the ball and working to establish the run a little bit more there, especially in the third quarter.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think I felt that way after the game, but I really felt that way after listening to that answer that you're referring to, where Quinn kind of, you know, pushed it into an answer that had nothing to do with the question. Actually, if you go back and listen to it, because it was about the offensive line specifically. But I think that's interesting. Who knows if it would have worked or not, because Green Bay's really good, but it would have been interesting had they tried it. Thank you so much for doing this. Good luck with everything. Really appreciate it. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Kevin.
Yep. Tom Shadd, everybody, now covers the team for the Washington Post. All right. This is the question I want to ask, and we will open up phone lines at 301-230-0980. What's the solution with Jaden Daniels? You can also answer what you hope happens this weekend. We don't know a lot. You know, you can tea leaf read like I tried to do at the beginning of the show, but they are very buttoned up out there. And unless the doctor is talking or unless Jaden talks or the agent talks, we're not going to know for sure, I don't think, until the end of the week at the earliest. If you want to guess, does he play or doesn't he play, you can do that. But then what's the solution for Jaden moving forward to get out of this, you know, we're going to have to deal with this every year. You know, a game or two where he's going to be on the injury report, you know, perhaps plays, not plays. You know, maybe there isn't a solution to this, but I want you to weigh in with what do you think a solution to keeping him upright, healthy, and away from as many hits as he has taken in his first 22 games as an NFL quarterback. Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980. And don't forget, you can watch us on the Team 980's YouTube channel. Hit the like button and hit the subscribe button when you get there.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.